I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official podcast for UK Seahawkers. As ever, myself, Stuart Court, is joined by Mr. Ross Bell and Mr. Adam Nathan. How are you guys?
Good, mate. Good to be back.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks. Obviously, me and Adam did the live one at the pub. I hastily whacked onto Facebook Live after
YouTube issues.
But yeah, Adam?
Not bad. I spent the morning tearing up the golf course, and I do mean literally tearing up the golf course, unfortunately. But, you know, we live and learn. First game of the season, we've got to start somewhere.
Yeah. So you've been like the resident mole, digging up all the holes and stuff.
Handicap's certainly my grip at this stage, amongst other things.
This week, we will quickly run through all the moves and shakes that have happened in Seattle since we last convened, get to one or two of your questions, and if we have time, a few true or false as well. But the main line of this podcast is to look ahead to next week's NFL Scouting Combine. We have Rod Staton joining us to talk through the players, drills, and times to watch for in terms of the Seahawks and the general 2017 NFL Draft. First, though, a few notes. The team, if you missed it, are not losing a 2017 second-round pick through the Sherman non-injury report deal. On top of that, taking on injuries, Cam Chancellor and Cliff Avril both made it clear on their social medias they've undergone off-season surgeries. Obviously, no worry seems to emanate from either player or the team, but it's certainly something to keep an eye on as camps roll around. A few changes have been made to the staff as well. Running back coach and former Seahawks running back Sherman Smith has been relieved of his duties, or fired. Smith has been the running back coach since Pete Carroll came to Seattle in 2010, but has now been replaced by Chad Morton, who was the assistant backs coach in 2016. It wasn't the coach we expected to leave, though, was it, Russ?
No. Do you think he's possibly been relieved of duty because of the season we had running the ball? Seems slightly harsh.
Yeah, if you mean a new approach, maybe, because I've no idea what Chad Morton's background is, but if you're going to blame anyone for the lack of running game, you can't just blame Sherman Smith.
No.
It's not his fault we didn't have Marshawn Lynch. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, it seems, I'm trying to think of a football analogy to sort of make it work, but it seems like blaming the nutritionist for the players not being fit enough to last 90 minutes or something. It just doesn't seem like it should be the root of the problem. But interestingly, a guy who is on, from USC, a guy called Petros Papadakis, is on a radio show in Seattle every week and said that Carroll doesn't like really having older coaches around, and he quite likes the younger guys who he can mold. And then you've got Sherman Smith saying, I spoke to Pete and, you know, wonder whether it's time for retirement. And Pete said, yeah, maybe now's the good time. So you almost feel like it's a slight edging out of a guy there. Maybe reluctantly, who knows? But it does seem like a strange place to pin the blame of the run game on him.
Yeah, and also Sherman Smith was apparently the second ever draft pick the Seahawks made back in 1976. So his affiliation with the team has been a pretty damn long one. Elsewhere, linebackers assistant coach Lofa Tatupu has also walked away. An assistant head coach and defensive line assistant coach Rocky Sito has left the team after working alongside Pete Carroll for over a decade. He has left the team to join a ministry. That may be a void to fill just with how long he's been in the Pete Carroll program. Outside of that, nothing major has occurred with free agency still a couple of weeks away. But now we'll move on to looking at the annual scouting combine, which kicks off in Indianapolis next week. To help us do that, we have Rob Staton joining us again. Rob is the man behind the great website SeahawksDraftBlog.com. He's also the second man to be a two-time podcast guest. How are we, Rob?
I'm very good, thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys.
No worries. Thanks for coming on again. So for people who don't know, who are new to it, what is the Scouting Combine and what purpose does it play in the draft process, Rob?
Well, a lot of people are kind of sniffy about the Combine, but it is a really important part of of the draft process, you know, specifically for teams that value traits like the Seahawks do. If you have watched tape and you have a couple of guys that are graded fairly similarly, and then if it's a linebacker, for example, who runs in the 4.5s, and then you've got another guy who runs in the 4.6s, then it can act as a tiebreaker. And teams like the Seahawks often go into these combines sort of looking for the unique athletes, you know, the guys that have got length, that have got explosive physical traits, that have got the kind of personality and character they look for. You know, the meetings at the combine are very important. You know, for me, it's as important as anything during the NFL offseason. And like I say, I know a lot of people sort of see it as, you know, whoever runs the 40 the fastest, you know, it's a bit of a, you know, a fan spectacle, a media-generated thing. But I genuinely think the teams pay a lot of attention to the combine, and it's vitally important.
Yeah, and there's parts of the combine, obviously, that isn't put on TV. Obviously, in the weight room, there's all the interviews that go on. I think it'll start, the first players land next Wednesday, isn't it? And it all kicks off.
What happens is that the first players will arrive on Tuesday, and that is going to be the offensive linemen, the running backs, and the place kickers. And what you're going to what they will do is they will go through some initial introductory meetings. They will get measured. They will do a medical, I think, on the second day that they are there, and some more meetings. They will do press conferences and interviews with the media. And then the third day, I think it is, that they are actually in Indianapolis, they will do the workouts. So it all begins, the first sort of runs will happen on Friday, and that will be the offensive linemen, you know, doing the 40 and doing the drills. And then the running backs, they actually used to do the running backs on the Saturday, but they moved that to Friday to sort of give it a bit more of a Hollywood feel on the first day. The second day, you will see the quarterbacks and the receivers and the tight ends performing. Sunday, it's about the defensive linemen and the linebackers, and then they keep the defensive backs alone until Monday. And with a really large group of draftable cornerbacks and safeties this year, that Monday at the combine is going to be fascinating this year.
Yeah, obviously a few weeks out, defensive back seems to be a regular point of call for people who do mock drafts for the Seahawks at 26. For me, Budda Baker's one of the guys I keep keening on. And Marlon Humphrey's been mocked to us quite a few times from Alabama. What drills will show the most for that position on Monday for people who will watch?
So what the things that you need to look out for in terms of sort of Seahawks defensive backs, length is always very important. You know, keep an eye on the measurements. If it's a cornerback prospect, you know, the Seahawks have never drafted a player with arm length less than 32 inches. And people might wonder, why is that important? Well, people might be surprised to know that 100% of multiple all-pro cornerbacks since 1998 have had 32-inch arms, which, you know, you kind of wonder, well, why is that important? Well, you know, the statistics prove that it's important. There's a reason why the Seahawks key in on little physical ideals like this, and that is one of them. You know, if you have got great athleticism and you can combine that with a length, you know, to get a paw on the football when you're competing 1v1, whether it's outside or in the slot, then it's vitally important. So at cornerback, you need to concentrate on 32-inch arms. For the role that Budda Baker would play in Seattle, I think that really you're looking at short area quickness. How good is he in the three cone? That is a real sort of an agility test there. When you're working in the slot, it's about changing direction very quickly, explosive change of direction. So the three cone, the short shuttle is important. I think that if it's someone like Budda Baker, it's going to be a case of, is he a good enough athlete for the Seahawks to really consider in the first round? A defensive back position, you know, the only defensive back they've drafted in the first two rounds before is Earl Thomas. So, you know, he was a physical phenomenon. So, you know, you've got to expect that if Budda Baker is going to be an option for them, he's going to have to test very well. He's also going to have to make up for a lack of size. You know, he's been listed at 5'10", 180. I've listened to an interview we did where he was saying that he got up to 192, I think, before the season. But he will lose weight during the year. So, you know, he's a smaller player. They're probably, if they drafted him, they would probably try to use him the way that Arizona uses Tyrann Mathieu, which is almost like as a nickel optional safety and a backup safety as well, if Earl Thomas missed more time. So for that, you would then say, okay, we need to see a full explosive profile here. He's probably going to have to run a 40-yard dash in the 4.4s, which he's capable of. He's probably going to have a pretty good vertical jump. He's probably going to have a great broad jump. You know, the explosive testing is so important. And, you know, he's going to have to put that kind of a profile together. So that's, and that will go for, you know, Budabaker's going to have a good workout. Justin Evans is another guy at Texas A&M who's a little bit bigger than Budabaker, but he's expected to have a sensational combine. Not many people talk about him. But he could sort of fit into the late first round because he's going to test as well as Byron Jones did a couple of years ago. And the other guy that people are talking about is Obi Melifonwu, who is, you know, built like a Greek god. You know, he's a complete opposite to Baker in terms of size. He's expected to have a brilliant combine, but would play a similar role to Baker.
Adam?
So this is going to act as sort of my love letter to Christian McCaffrey in asking a question at the same time. I've been a huge fan of his in the last few years. In college, obviously, he's so fun to watch. And I was thinking that looking at the team now, I can't see that there's necessarily one position above all that I would massively prioritize. And for me, if they decided to go best player available at 26, I would have no problem with that. And looking at the way that the two teams in the Super Bowl played, catching the ball out of the backfield in the running game was so crucial. And I felt that the Seahawks this year proved that actually, if they have a running back that can catch, they can scheme pretty well for him if you think about how well ProSize played against New England. And even, you know, Marshawn Lynch, two of his best plays in the playoffs recently were on wheel routes against Green Bay and New England. And I'm just wondering that if they think that ProSize may not be that durable, especially with what McCaffrey could offer you in the return game, with Tyler Lockett maybe being too good for that now, what would be the chances of maybe taking him? But if not him, where's another running back that is so effective in a pass, you know, in the passing game that we could look out for maybe in the later rounds?
Well, Christian McCaffrey is a really fun player to watch. You know, if anybody who sort of really follows college football, you can't not be a fan of Christian McCaffrey. You know, especially in this last year, I know he didn't get sort of maybe the publicity that he's had in previous years, but Stanford had nothing, you know, apart from Solomon Thomas and Christian McCaffrey. So there was a lot of responsibility on him. He got a little bit banged up during the season as well. The issue with him for Seattle, I think, is that he is only listed at about 197 pounds, which is really light for a running back. And the Seahawks have drafted running backs regularly under Carroll, but they've all been of a certain... I mean, it's bizarre how they've all been virtually the same size. You know, Christian Michael was 220 pounds, CJ ProSize 220, Robert Turbin 222, Alex Collins 217... Spencer Ware was 228. You know, they were all in that sort of 220, 225 pound bracket, which is, you know, and the height is very similar as well, sort of 5'10", 5'11". So you can see there is an ideal that they have there at running back. And even ProSize, who was this, you know, dynamic pass-catching former receiver, had that size. And McCaffrey, if they were to take McCaffrey early, it would be a huge departure from that. Now, there are things that, you know, you can imagine them liking. He's, you know, all about football. They like that. He's physical despite his size. He's really sudden. They love a sudden athlete to have on offense. You know, you've seen that with the guys they've had with Percy Harvin and Tyler Lockett and Paul Richardson, you know, all very sudden athletes. His ability to cut and go and break off big runs and be a one-cut guy is really effective. As you mentioned, their return skills. We know that Pete Carroll really values special teams. I just think that the one thing that Carroll has done, and he's done it consistently now so that we know that we can put some faith in this, is when he speaks at the end of his press conference and says, at the end of season press conference, these are the needs that I'm focusing on. He's exclusively gone after those needs. So, you know, to give people a quick history lesson, at the end of the 2010 season, his first year, he said, we need to get the running game going. That has to be their priority. We've got Marshawn Lynch in now. We need to create an environment where he can succeed. Their first two picks in the draft were James Carpenter, who was the best run-blocking left tackle in college football in 2010 for Alabama. And they went and took John Moffitt. A year later, he was asked what they need. He said, speed in the front seven. They go and get Bruce Irvin and Bobby Wagner. The year after that, he was asked, he said, touchdown makers. They went and got Percy Harvin and Christian Michael. you know, it was pretty obvious what they needed in 2014, receiver and right tackle. They went after that. And then the reason he didn't give any indication as to what they were going to do ahead of the 2015 season is because all the focus, of course, was on the way the Super Bowl was lost. So, you know, nobody was asking him about team needs after that Super Bowl. Everybody was asking him about the decision to throw instead of run against New England. And this year, he came out and essentially said that the big three priorities, as far as he's concerned, in the draft are cornerback, linebacker and offensive line. And it was interesting because linebacker kind of stands out a little bit there, and people think, well, they've got Bobby Wagner, they've got KJ Wright, but he went into great detail to explain why he felt that linebacker was a need, despite the fact that they've got two all-pro players in that unit already. And because he was so specific again with the priority needs, I think we can pretty much take to the bank that what their main aims in this draft are going to be, a cornerback, linebacker and offensive line, and that they are going to draft for those three positions within the first three rounds.
Yeah.
And you wanted a running back, didn't you, that could catch passes?
Sure, someone similar, maybe that you could get fifth, sixth round or something like that.
Well, it is quite a deep draft. I mean, I'm a big fan of Elijah Hood, who was at North Carolina, really explosive athlete, and I think that he could be somebody later on. He's got some pass-catching ability. He's kind of like a hybrid of what you get from Rawls and Procise. So he's not exactly like either, but he's got kind of a flavour of both. So that is somebody they could look at. I know a lot of people like Joe Williams at Utah, you know, really, really fast guy. Could be somebody that could do that, you know, really physical type of player. And I think that one player who people don't really assume as being much of a pass catcher because of his size is Wayne Gallman. But I think that he at Clemson is somebody that is kind of flying under the radar a little bit, another tough running back. And he could be somebody that, you know, could do that role as well, that might be an absolute bargain on day three.
Yeah, the running back I keep watching is Marlon Mack, who just has the weirdest way of running with the ball in his hands. It never seems to be close to his body, which obviously is a massive thing. It's one thing that seemed to keep Christian Michael down for a few years. Linebacker Mike Morgan is unrestricted free agent. And Hassan Reddick is one of my favourite players all told in this draft, but he's likely gone now by 26 and after next week, isn't he?
Possibly. I mean, I know when we were on last time, we were talking about him, and I think we discussed the possibility of him being a surprise, you know, first round option for the Seahawks. And it goes to show how quickly things can change, because, you know, now he's kind of considered by, I think, anybody who paid attention during the Senior Bowl as a universally believed to be a first round pick. His production, his athleticism, his versatility, the ability to play in any scheme, to play any of the linebacker positions, the fact that he adds a pass rushing dynamic, he's got a gritty backstory. I think that he is a certainty to go in the first round, and if he's there at 26, I think the Seahawks will pretty much run to the podium regardless of who else is there. So I think that there's a chance that he could be there. I mean, it's someone asked me about this, you know, is he likely to go, and I kind of suggested that if he went at 16 to Baltimore, or if he went at 17 to Washington, or if he went at 22 to Miami or 23 to New York, you wouldn't be surprised. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's there at 26 either, because this is a guy who, you know, he's considered by some to be a bit of a project. You know, what he's played rush end for Temple. If you want to play him at the mic or the will, he's going to have to learn that position. So that might put a few people off. There was an arrest during the season. I know that his representative suggested after it had all been sort of thrown out that it was a mistaken identity situation. But, you know, teams will look into that. It's not unbelievable that he's there at 26, but I think if he's there, he could easily be the guy. The other player that I think is very interesting in that position is Jared Davis at Florida. Because he played, you know, the one thing they went after last year was, and people might have forgotten how Afedi and Jaron Reed played in college because they didn't quite have the impact that people were hoping in the NFL in their first year. But they played with real intensity and physicality, and they were sort of, you know, nasty players on the field. And when you watch Jared Reed, you sort of see that. You know, you can imagine the Seahawks really liking this guy. Really physical, great tackler. You know, great range, fantastic closing speed, a team leader, you know, somebody who could easily fill in for Bobby Wagner or KJ Wright at the mic or the will. He's not best suited to play strong side linebacker, but could he play some snaps there and you just put the three linebackers on the field, you could. So I think he could be sort of a, maybe a, if they want to go linebacker early, he might be a plan B option. But, you know, it kind of, there's so many things to consider, you know, whether a cornerback's going to be there who has got the length and the athleticism that they like enough to take in round one, whether there's a, you know, one of the safeties we've talked about and whether they consider using a Buffalo nickel, a big nickel type of player like a lot of teams use. You know, the Seahawks ran a lot of 4-2-5 last year, playing two linebackers and five defensive backs. That kind of system lends itself to having, you know, three safeties on the field. So, you know, if they wanted to go for Buda Baker or Justin Evans or Obi Melifonwu or Jabril Peppers at Michigan, if he was there, you know, these are some of the options they're going to have to consider. And this is the great thing about this draft class, is that you could make a case for about 10 different guys going at 26, and yeah, none of them would be a bad option.
Yeah. On linebackers quickly, Mark Christensen, one of the guys, well, regular contributors and listeners, wonder for your thoughts on Alex Anzalone from Florida. He says he seems a fifth round guy for him, or is he someone you stay away from because of all his injury concerns?
No, I love Alex Anzalone. He was a player that at the start of the year, not many people knew about, start of the college season, because of the injury issues. You know, he was barely on the field, but I can't remember which game, I think it might be Missouri against Florida I was watching, and I think pretty much the first defensive snap, he was making this huge play in the backfield. You were like, who's this guy? You know, he's got long blonde hair, kind of looks a bit like Clay Matthews, plays a bit like Clay Matthews. And, you know, Clay Matthews is a former Pete Carroll guy. And they used him in sort of that Sam role. So, you know, this is the thing. I mean, if they don't go Hassan Reddick or Jared Davis or Zach Cunningham, for example, in the first round, you know, I think that Alex Anzalone in second round, third round, you know, depending on how far he falls because of the injury issues, is definitely an option. You know, I love Alex Anzalone, and he definitely is a fit at the Sam. And the other player who I think is really interesting possibly in round two is a guy called Tyus Bowser, who is at Houston. He, again, is more of a Sam than a Mike or a Will. But that is kind of what Seattle needs. And, you know, I think he's only really scratching the surface of his potential. He's the kind of guy, you know, the Seahawks love traits. You could see them getting him in, coaching him up, trying to make him into a bit of a Bruce Irvin-style player who could maybe kick inside if needs be as well. So, you know, there's some real, you know, when Pete Carroll talks about linebacker being a need, I think it's partly because he believes that, and I think partly because he sees a lot of value in those first two rounds.
Yeah, Bowser's nickname, I think, was the Bulldozer at Houston, so that'd be something, quite fun. Ross?
Yeah, well, last year we went Efedi first round. Do you think we go offensive line again, someone like Cam Robinson or Ramczyk possibly?
Ramczyk.
Make it past maybe the, do you think either of those guys make it past Denver or Detroit?
Possibly. I think that Garrett Bowles is going to go in the top 15. He's the best offensive tackle in college football, and that wasn't really close last year. He just a sensational player, and even though he's going to be 25 in May, I'm a 30, soon to be 33 year old, and I'm talking about 25 being old. You know, you could get 7 years out of him, and he'd be 32. So 7 years of a first round pick's more than enough to justify sort of top 15 grade. Mm-hmm. Ryan Ramczyk's problem is that he's got a torn labrum, because he's only played 1 year of college football and hasn't done sort of the junior pro days in the past where teams can find out about his physical profile, it's hard to determine just what his upside is. You know, how explosive is he? Something the Seahawks put a lot of faith in. How is he as a tester to go into the league and then make the step up after just 1 year of starting at Wisconsin? So because he's not going to work out at the combine, he's not going to perform at the Wisconsin Pro Day because of this torn labrum, he's a real mystery. You know, someone is going to, his tape's fine, you know, I don't think he's as good as Bowles. He's pretty solid. Yeah. He's a solid player for Wisconsin, and he played well against LSU and Arden Key and players like that. But can you project him to be a great left tackle is the thing that might keep him on the board till 26. If he's there, I think he could be an option. But as you mentioned, you know, Denver, the Giants, you know, potentially going to be looking at a defensive line. As for Cam Robinson, you know, I'm not a great fan of Cam Robinson. He reminds me a lot of DJ Fluke, Cruz at Alabama,
right?
And that he's a bit cumbersome. His foot, his kick slide is really labored, and there's no doubt that, you know, if he locks on and he can square the defender up and, you know, get his hands into your chest, then he's really successful, because he's huge. You know, he's like 330 pounds, 6'6". You know, he is an athlete.
Yeah.
He's that Alabama type of offensive lineman. You know, he's had a lot of success there. But if you get around the edge and, you know, against these really faster edge rushers that you're seeing in the NFL now, I think he's going to struggle there. And I think, you know, a lot of people are suggesting that he's going to kick inside to guard, like a lot of people projected for DJ Fluker. And I kind of feel like the Seahawks have been there, done that, and got three different T-shirts, because they've got James Carpenter, who was right tackle, who kicked inside. Justin Britt, right tackle, who kicked inside. And now we've seen Jermaine Ifedi, who was drafted right tackle and eventually kicked inside. Do they really want to go for the four, you know, for the fourth time here, to draft a guy and then say, oh, crap, we better play him at left guard instead? So I think that it probably is going to be Bowles or Ramchick at 26. And if neither of those two guys are there, maybe look at round two. Dorian Johnson at Pittsburgh played guard, but he was a five-star recruit as a left tackle. You know, maybe somebody could bounce outside again. There's a guy called Antonio Garcia at Troy who could be a developmental option. I think they might like Roderick Johnson, depending on how he tests. You know, really long, big offensive tackle from Florida State. Taylor Motton, who played tackle and guard at Western Michigan. You know, there are different options that they could look at in round two and round three. Round chicken balls, aren't there?
What do you think about Adam Biznawati as well, just while we're on the line?
Yeah.
Is he a later round pick, possibly?
I liked him a lot, actually, at Pittsburgh, but the problem with him was that when he got to the Senior Bowl, his measurements were really poor. So right. he's only got 32.5-inch arms. He was quite a lot lighter than others. He was like 305 pounds.
Yeah.
And you know, again, we've had 7 years of Pete Carroll and John Schneider drafting now. The offensive linemen that they have drafted have been exclusively really long, long armed players. So, you know, Okung 36-inch arms, Ifedi 36-inch, Carpenter 34. You know, these are the kind of players that they're looking for, and Biznawati 32.5 would be he'd be a bit of an anomaly pick. You know, he'd be a departure from what they've done in the past. So as much as I kind of liked him, and I think he could be a pretty good guard at the next level, I'm not sure that he will be a target for Seattle.
for someone like Garcia, who, when I watched him, he looks a really, really good pass protector, but seems to struggle a little bit in run game. What would be something to watch for him to do next in drills next week, where he could kind of calm down the concerns of his run blocking abilities and stuff? Is there anything he can do next week, or is that just
The first thing he can do is show that he's added a bit of weight, because there was some concern going into the Senior Bowl that he had trouble retaining weight, and then he was measured at, it was weighed at 293 pounds, mm-hmm. which, you know, you kind of want offensive tackles these days of like 320, and he's 293. So that was a major concern. When you're talking about things like how can he be better in the run game, that's one of the reasons, you know, if you need to be able to push the pile, and he's not big or strong enough. What he has got going for him, I don't know if you guys saw the Troy-Clemson game from 2016, and, you know, Troy held their own in that game against the national champions, and he had a really good game in pass pro. You know, his pass protection skills are really, really good. But his run blocking, as you mentioned, because of the lack of size, the lack of power, it definitely needs work. So I think the one thing he needs to do is turn up to the combine at 300 pounds, you know, even if he just has two cheeseburgers the night before the weigh or something, you know, just get up to 300 pounds and, you know, when you're going into meetings, have some kind of an idea how you're going to convince teams that with a pro weight program and diet, and, you know, the dietitians that they have in the pros, that you can stay above 300 pounds. That's sort of one thing. The other thing is just have an explosive workout. Explosive testing is not something the Seahawks focus on. It's something that, you know, the rest of the league focus on. You really want to see 31 reps on the bench press, you know, and that's going to be a struggle for him, I think, because of his long arms and because of his overall length and his lack of size. You want to see a 10-foot broad jump a 9 foot broad jump, 10 foot would be incredible, 9 foot broad jump, and you want to see a vertical jump that's, you know, over 30 inches as well. So that, you know, they're the things that you are really focusing on with the explosive testing, and that's what he has to dominate in, you know. And I know that the 40 times is neither here nor there. Some of the other testing, you know, things like three cone, not particularly interesting. You know, some of the mirror work that they do and the kick slide that they do at the combine is interesting to watch. But really, for these offensive linemen, these are the things you need to focus on. It is the bench press, it is the broad jump, and it is the vertical jump.
Yeah. Adam?
Tight end is a really interesting position this year, and partly for the Seahawks as well. I'm sure we'll go on to free agency in a bit, but it looks like we're going to lose Luke Wilson because I imagine he's going to get offered a better contract than we can afford. Nick Vinette, you've basically had redshirted for a year, or he's just not that good, but let's err on the side of optimism and go for the former. Brandon Williams is there, and obviously Jimmy Graham. Obviously, I don't expect people like OJ Howard to be available at 26, and maybe even Njoku, but is there a guy that you think could do a good job as a tight end for us, whether that's strictly as an extra run-blocking guy or as a guy who can catch passes? And on the sort of free agency and Seahawky thing, you've got Jimmy Graham going into his last year of his contract. He has definitely shown signs of improving in his blocking. But every year with Seattle, I seem to think, you know, if we can just add that one big body receiver to the outside. And I just wonder if going into the last year of his contract, you just say, F it, let's just line Jimmy up as a wide receiver three on a regular basis, and you get another tight end in the draft in what is a tight end heavy draft anyway. I'm just wondering your thoughts on that.
If there was a year to look at tight end, I think this could be it. Whether or not some other needs in the first sort of two or three rounds will take priority or not might be difficult for them. But, you know, I think they have to find a way to get Jimmy Graham. The Atlanta game in the playoffs is a perfect example of, you know, it felt like he was going to be a key in that game, and they couldn't find a way, apart from the first drive, to feature him at all. So they need to, it will vary from week to week. You know, I know they want to try and make him the complete tight end. Pete Carroll's talked about that. But it's about week to week finding a role for him to get the best out of him. I think that he will just run, it's the final year of his contract, I think he'll run through that. You know, they'll have the option to franchise him in a year if they want to, or let him walk and get a comp pick. So it's going to be an interesting year to see what they do with him. If they lose Luke Wilson, they're probably going to have to add at least one tight end. You know, you mentioned the two best ones there, OJ Howard and David Njoku. I think Bucky Hodges and Evan Engram will be a bit too rich for Seattle in round two. It'll be interesting to see where Jake Butt falls. Jake Butt at Michigan is a really fun player, but he tore his ACL in their bowl game. I think it was the bowl game or the Ohio State game. It was one of the last two games of the year that he tore his ACL. So, you know, how does that move him back? Is that someone you bring in? You maybe put him on the PUP list and have him six games in. You know, he's a really good player. I think that there's a lot of talk at the moment about Adam Shaheen, who's from Ashland, who is 6'6", 277 pounds, really athletic. You know, how's he going to test at the combine? But just sort of give you an outside name as somebody who could maybe come in and do a role, who can be, you know, maybe more of a blocker, can still catch the occasional pass. A name that every time I watch Pittsburgh, kind of he stood out quite a few times, was Scott Orndorff. He's sort of 6'5", 256 pounds. You know, you would never mistake him for Jimmy Graham or Njoku or OJ Howard. But he's good at what he does. Decent blocker. Helped that prolific run game at Pittsburgh. Helped the tackle Bisnavati and the rest of that offensive line greatly, and managed to make a handful of really big plays during the year. He's kind of inconsistent. You know, we saw that at the Senior Bowl. But I think Scott Orndorff is somebody that, if you were looking at maybe day three, somebody who could come in and forge a role and maybe replace Luke Wilson on the roster, he's somebody to look for. And the other thing is that I think when Luke Wilson was, when he was going through from Rice, he was considered like a 4-4 runner, you know, really, really athletic tight end. It's just keep an eye on the class overall and see who performs really well. You know, is there somebody out there that we're not really talking about at the moment who can, you know, crack the 4-4s or the 4-5s, who can be Luke Wilson at a cheap cost for 4 years? I think that's kind of the key to look for at the combine.
Yeah. But quickly back on the offensive line, obviously Alpha UK have picked up on it in the last few weeks. There's a Brit in the draft this year. Is it Jermaine Elmignon from Texas A&M? Is there any? Well, obviously, some people have been messaging, asking about him. Do you see him being drafted? And if he is, does he fit that athletic profile for the Seahawks?
I think he's certainly got a lot of potential. And although he worked mainly inside, there was something about him, more so than I think it's Avery, the tackle that played left tackle there instead of Jermaine Ifedi. I mean, he's really powerful. I think maybe whether he has the kind of the footwork and the instincts and the experience within the game, because he was a bit of a late comer to the game, whether he's got that to play outside and play tackle remains to be seen. But I do think that there's something there. I mean, he's going to get drafted. I think he could easily be sort of a round four, round five type of guy. There's something to work with. You know, he's got certain traits that I think that will interest teams. He's the kind of size that teams, in particular the Seahawks, have been looking for recently. So, yeah, Illumina could be somebody that the Seahawks certainly have a look at there. And there's, you know, I know people, NFL UK picked up on the fact that he's from England. I don't think they've picked up on the fact that Obi Melifonwu is also from England as well. Oh, originally, wow. I think his parents were from Nigeria, but I think then they moved. Whether he was born in England or whether he was England, he was in England for a time when he was very, very little, and then they moved to America when he was a few years older. But he is originally from London, I think.
Oh, cool. When you watch him, he just seems to make every tackle. It's just, I don't know if anyone else made a tackle for Connecticut last year. heading into free agency, the one guy me, Adam, have like pinned on our drawing board is Calais Campbell. Obviously, the interior pass rush was somewhat lacking from Jaron Reed, McDaniel, and others, Atuba Rubin. If Calais Campbell goes elsewhere, is there any defensive line? Malik McDowell is pretty much consensus guy, not named Jonathan Allen, at the position. So is there anyone else at the defensive line you can see us looking at, or anyone to keep an eye on next week?
Yeah, I think it's possibly the best position for free agents, because and by that I don't mean there's a load of big names out there that are, you know, that people are going to be really excited about, but what there is possible cheap depth. So there's a guy like Terrell McClain, who's at Dallas, who's a good rotation guy at Dallas. You know, he's 28. He's somebody that you could maybe get for $3-4 million, who could do a really good job for you on the defensive line. You know, Lawrence Guy at Baltimore, in a very similar situation. You know, you could get him relatively cheap, you know, maybe on a Tabo Rubin type contract. Sly Williams, who's at Denver, you know, all these players are in this kind of same age bracket. You know, Sly Williams could come in and be more of that sort of pass rushing type of guy who can play early downs as well. There's Carl Klug at Tennessee. There's quite a few others as well who could do that. And while, you know, there's not going to be that sort of Kawan Short, Calais Campbell type probably coming to Seattle, you can maybe get two guys on $3 or $4 million and just add to the rotation there. And, you know, I wanted them, you know, I think every NFL fan wants their team to sign Calais Campbell because he's one of the best players in the league. It's unusual for a player of his talent to be available, and the Cardinals have kind of messed up a little bit here, that their cap situation is what it is, that they are now in a position where they're likely not going to be able to keep him and Chandler Jones. But the Seahawks scheme is, you know, I know that I've complained about it in the past, fans have complained about it. There's not really ever been that really dynamic interior pass rusher in Seattle, but the 4-3 under does not feature that. You know, it really is about gap control, because you are playing, because of the way that the ends are spaced, because of the way the linebackers are spaced. Really, it's about gap control from your two defensive tackles. You know, they are, you've got one defensive tackle doing the two A gaps, and you've got another guy covering one gap, and it's about keeping the linebackers clean. So that the scheme itself does not really feature that kind of penetrating, brilliant Calais Campbell type. Now, if they had a chance at Aaron Donald, of course you find a way to put him in there. If they had a chance at Sheldon Rankins, you find a way to get him in there. But that's not really the Seahawks scheme. And the guys that they've had who've rushed the passer from inside, Clinton McDonald, Jordan Hill, you know, and they drafted Quinton Jefferson a year ago, are kind of role players who come in on third down. So I think what they're going to do is possibly bring in a cost-effective defensive, a veteran defensive tackle to compete and push Quinton Jefferson to try and be that interior pass rusher. But sadly, I know if people are holding out hope of there being this really dynamic, big-name defensive tackle who gets 10 sacks coming to the Seahawks this offseason, it's probably not going to happen.
We've already had
I really did read your article at the wrong time last night, Rob, because it was about 11 o'clock when it was watching, just about to go to bed. I'm thinking, this is great, combine coming up, free agency soon. First sentence, do not expect the Seahawks to sign Calais Campbell. My phone was out the window. I'd had enough.
it'd be great to have him. I mean, he's you know, I think that a lot of Seahawks fans that I was talking to at the end of the year were saying, we've got the cap room, you know, go after him. And then I kind of started looking across and seeing what other fans were saying. When I do the mock drafts, I like to get a feel for what team fans feel their team needs are. And I think on every forum or Twitter account I went on, I think every fan base in the league was talking about Calais Campbell. And it made me realise very quickly that this was maybe not going to be as realistic as first thought, because he's been earning $14, $15 million a year in Arizona. I kind of thought, well, maybe he'll get Michael Bennett money in the open market initially. And then I figured, well, there are teams out there with $100 million in free cap room. You know, if you can have Calais Campbell for 2 years at $16 million a year, why wouldn't you do it? And unfortunately, that's the kind of money that the Seahawks can't compete with.
Oh, he's going to be a Patriot, isn't he?
Awesome. They've got cap room.
Yeah,
they've got enough cap room to do it.
Yeah. Is there any other positions or players to keep an eye on for? Obviously, 12 months ago, I think Alex Collins' draft stock plummeted. I mean, he just didn't do anything of note, did he, in Indianapolis last season? Any players to keep an eye out for next week?
The combine?
Well, yeah.
The thing is, it's such a great draft class. I mean, you could find and particularly the positions of need for Seattle, you know, you could find, like I said, about six or seven guys in the first round that you could really like, but there's depth throughout. You know, there's a safety at Colorado called Tedrick Thompson, who is just, you know, I just think he's a fantastic player. His brother's in the league. He's called Tedrick. His brother, I think, is called Cedric. So I don't know what the parents were thinking there, but Tedrick is incredible. I mean, I think he had seven or eight interceptions this year, closing burst, like, you know, did play very similarly to Earl Thomas in the backfield. It would be very interesting to see how he works out, because his brother had a fantastic combine workout. So keep an eye on Tedrick Thompson as somebody the Seahawks might just fall for. A guy called Howard Wilson at Houston, who's a cornerback. Check on his length, because I don't know the stats, but I think he had something like an interception at every four passes thrown his way or something ridiculous. Nice. Like that last season. You know, incredible cover guy, you know, really scratching the surface of his potential, has got similar size to Jeremy Lane. You know, they played Lane in the nickel. Lane played like 71% of the snaps last year. So if they're willing to have that, you know, physical profile size playing the nickel that often, Howard Wilson could be somebody who could maybe push Jeremy Lane, maybe even take his job next year. So he's somebody to keep an eye on at Houston. John Johnson, the safety at Boston College, is really, really interesting. Isaac Asiata, who played next to Garrett Bowles, who's a left guard at Utah, really fun play. You've got Fabian Moreau at UCLA. I know a lot of people want to see him be a bit more physical, because he is so big and strong and powerful. You kind of want to see a bit more from him in the run game, but as a cover guy, you know, as potential, really, really high. There's so many options at safety. You know, Marcus May at Florida, keep an eye on him. We've kind of gone through some of the bigger names that they're going to potentially be in the first round. There's another cornerback at Colorado called Akello Witherspoon, whose run defending is atrocious.
There's three of the secondary Colorado in this draft, because there's Awuzie as well. Awuzie, yeah.
You've got Awuzie, who's, I think the size thing is going to be, he's listed at 6 foot 205, and I don't think he's that big. So, and I've seen something suggesting he had 29-inch arms, so he might not be in contention for Seattle. But Witherspoon's 6'3", 190. A good thing to do is to go and find when draft prospects have played against the best of the best. And Colorado played Washington last year, and I didn't see anybody cover John Ross as well as Akello Witherspoon. And Ross is going to be a top 20 pick. John Ross is sensational.
Yeah.
And Akello Witherspoon defended him better than any cornerback I saw last year. So in terms of coverage, in terms of length, in terms of profile, Witherspoon is exceptional. The problem is run defending and physicality is laughable. So whether or not that could be too important for Seattle or not, I'm not too sure. But another player to keep an eye on there, Kevin King, of course, at Washington, could destroy the combine next week.
Very excited if you keep
talking. I am. Kevin King's been my guy since, I think that since the Arizona State interception when he had one-handed. He's been the guy.
We were sat near the right next to it, right near the end zone where that happened. And did you see what he did at the Husky Combine a year ago?
Yeah.
He had a workout that is, if he does that at the combine next week, he ran a 6.40 in the 3 cone. If he does that again next week, that will be the fastest ever 3 cone performed at any position in the history of the combine. So if he does that again, and he had a 39.5 inch vertical last year, you know, these are things that the hand time on the 3 cone is, it's going to be a hand time at the combine next week. So he could do a 6.40. It's not laser timed the way that the 40 is.
Yeah.
39.5, that should translate. There's no reason why he should not jump as high in Indianapolis. If I might jump higher because he's been at Exos for the last 2 months, you know, preparing for the combine. You know, we were at a 10.10 in the broad, a 4.02 in the short shuttle. If he and Tony Pauline was reporting last week that he might run in the 4.4s. If he does that, he might go in the top 20. I mean, that would mean that he's the complete player with length, explosive athletic profile, and the ability.
Go ahead. And he played all over the field as well for the Huskies.
Played slot last few
years. Yeah.
He played in the slot last year.
Yeah, so is Kevin King the most likely player to be this year's Byron Jones? So, for those who don't know, Jones a couple of years ago had a vertical jump of 44.5 inches, a 4.3 40, and jumped halfway across Indiana State on his broad jump as well. So is he the guy this year to watch to do that?
I think Byron Jones jump where they didn't even have the lines on the field anymore, so they had to kind of do it again so they could get some new some more paint down there or something. I think that the three people who could do what he did are Kevin King, as we mentioned, Obi Melifonwu could even usurp Byron Jones according to his head coach, or his old head, the guy who got fired at Connecticut. And the other guy who is expected to do really well is Justin Evans, who I talked about earlier at Texas A&M. They're the three that could be sensational. And you know what? The Seahawks have never drafted a cornerback before the fourth round under Pete Carroll, but if Kevin King has the kind of workout we've talked about there, he could be an option. And, you know, to give you another name of someone to keep an eye on, Quincy Wilson at Florida did not have a very good Spark combine before he went to Florida in 2013. He ran a 4.6. 32-inch vertical, that's not the kind of profile that the Seahawks are going to take in the first round. But if you can get that time down, and he's been preparing for the combine, if he can get into the 4.4s, jump a bit higher in the vertical, his physicality, his extreme confidence, his length, his ability to play the ball, I think the team's only completed 40% of the passes thrown and throwing at him last year. You could imagine him playing in Seattle secondary. So a player that I spent a lot of time looking at last night, actually, and my opinion on him was a bit mixed before, but I spent a bit more time watching him last night and thought, he's better than I initially thought. So his workout is going to be especially important next week.
Adam?
Just one last one, as we were on the Huskies. I think there's 7 Huskies invited to the combine. I'm not going to be able to list them because I'll just forget one and that will be annoying. So in terms of Huskies that are going to flash and maybe stand out, obviously Mathis says he wants to break the bench press record, which would be really cool. What do you expect to see from the star Huskies in the combine? And as you say, where maybe are you picking some of them to go in the draft?
I think Mathis is going to be so interesting, because if he has a great combine, you could easily see him maybe going round 3 or maybe even round 2. I mean, he's kind of like a real wild card at the moment. But if he has kind of a middling workout, then you're not quite sure. I mean, he's posted a lot of videos, been working out, and it's quite impressive. But, let's see how he does it at the combine. Really fun player to watch. Really liked watching him before he got injured. So let's see how he does. Let's see how teams view him positionally as well. You know, whether he's just a pure edge, whether there's a bit of outside linebacker in there. I think that John Ross will run probably in the 4-2s, maybe early 4-3s, and that will cement his place in the top 20. Even with the injury history, I think someone is going to take a chance on this guy. He's just too explosive. He's like, he could be a more explosive version of DeSean Jackson without any of the character headaches.
And his route running is so clean. I was watching a video of Baldwin last night. The cuts that Baldwin makes are so clean. And all the best guys coming out of college now, the route running seems to be as important as anything else.
Well, everybody talks about Mike Williams and Corey Davis at Western Michigan, and I think, you know, you must be watching a different player if you don't think John Ross is the best, because as you mentioned there, you know, he will get into his breaks and he's created initial separation, and that's not just about athleticism, that's about savvy, that's about understanding your position, it's about understanding ways to get open and, you know, being a master of your craft, and that's what Doug Baldwin's done. I think John Ross actually spent a lot of time with DeSean Jackson before last season when he was recovering from injury, preparing to take the next step as a receiver, and you saw that last year. I mean, he's not just a go route, gets open because he's faster than everybody else like Will Fuller. He is the complete receiver in that he could be Odell Beckham good. I mean, the way that he gets open is just sensational. Buda Baker, you know, I love Baker. I can't wait to see him at the next level. I want to see where teams play him. If Seattle took him, no complaints from me. You know, is he going to be used as a sort of a single high type guy? You're going to drop him down into the slot. Team's going to play him like Tyrann Mathieu. You know, he just plays with such so much passion and character. And if he runs in the 4-3s, you know, his range could be, he could be top 20 or he could be top 45. I mean, the combine is going to be really important for him, but teams are just going to love his personalized character, his intensity. I think Elijah Qualls is going to go earlier than people think. I think there was some sort of talk about his attitude and stuff like that and whether he really, really wants this, but I think that what he does well. So I think that round two, round three, for Qualls is definitely a possibility. Sidney Jones is just a sensation, just an absolute brilliant, fantastic, wonderful player. I think he's going to go in the top 15. Kevin King, if he runs a 4-4, is going to go in the first round. You know, I was talking to somebody about Washington's defense the other day, and it's shockingly, it is underrated. I mean, like, how it's not good as much. How you just, you know, those players you just listed there, and they're all defense except John Ross. And then you consider that Vita Vea didn't come out, and, you know, Zim Victor didn't come out, and there's, you know, Vieira, and there's others that, you know, that are coming through now that are going to take the place of some of the big names. What a group that was last year.
We're the only team not to give up 30 points last year in the whole of college football.
Yeah. Do you know, it's crazy that they had to fight for a place in the playoffs at the end of the year. Because that defense should have been nationally recognized. It should have been. They, you know, I know that Michigan got pumped up because of Harbaugh. Ohio State got pumped up because of Urban Meyer and their reputation. The team that should have been pumped up every week was Washington, not because of the and they had a coach as high profile as the other two teams in Peterson, but they should have been pumped up because of the players they actually had, not the reputation of the coach. And I think if there was any justice, then last year it would have been Alabama 1, Washington kind of 2 for most of the year, and Clemson, you know, possibly in the top 3, and the two Big Ten teams should have been, you know, fighting amongst themselves rather than Clemson and Washington needing to scrap to get in there. And I think, you know, if Washington played Alabama again, that could have, you know, that was a close game until the pick six before halftime. So that could have been a very different outcome with just a little bit more maturity and a bit more big game experience with that Washington team.
It is all my fault, though, because I've now been to 3 Husky games and it's 3 defeats, and that includes the USC game this year, and I've now officially been banned from Husky Stadium by KJR, unfortunately, so that's the end of me at Husky Stadium.
Well, on that, though, next couple of years, it could be on the offensive side with the quarterback, running back, and left tackle really looking the part in the, or maybe for next year with Gaskin. Obviously, every year there's always that Brady Quinn, Aaron Rodgers, who sits in the green room on draft night looking awkward and not making eye contact with the cameraman. Dave Bailey wants to know what top player is most likely to fall the furthest in this class. Is it one of the quarterbacks, do you think?
No, I think they will go earlier than people think. And, you know, I found it interesting that Daniel Jeremiah mentioned yesterday there's more than a 50% chance that Kirk Cousins will get traded to San Francisco over the next few weeks, which would, for the number two pick, which, you know, we would just put that into perspective for me. Imagine having the number two pick, San Francisco, and having to pay Kirk Cousins, you know, $25 million a year. But that seems, if you believe Daniel Jeremiah, like a distinct possibility, and that would put Washington at number two. Washington would then need a solution at quarterback. You know, would they take one? They would have two first round picks at 2 and 17, so you would imagine that one of those could go on a quarterback. I think that we will see. I think Deshaun Watson's underrated. I think Mitch Trubisky is somewhat underrated. I think Deshaun Kizer has got a lot of upside and teams love that, and Patrick Mahomes' technique is insane, but it kind of works. So I think that they will get the player that I think might last a bit longer than people realize is Malik McDowell at Michigan State. And if Malik McDowell could be Jadeveon Clowney, I mean, he is. There was some time Michigan State had nothing on the defensive line last year, and he was insanely good in the first sort of 4 or 5 games. I mean, you was like watching J.J. Watt, Clowney at his best. You know, you were watching a phenomenal top 10 player. And then Michigan State started losing, and Malik McDowell decided that he couldn't be bothered anymore. And that is not a joke or an exaggeration. There is if you go and seek it out, I think it was the Michigan game at the end of the year, so a rivalry game. He breaks into the backfield, they hand it off to the running back ends up pushing the pile from the 5-yard line to the end zone, and Malik McDowell just stands there and watches this happen. And then when the running back breaks the play, and he kind of shrugs his shoulders and goes, "Ugh," you know, like, and you think you couldn't have got in. I mean, like, even if you thought there was no chance, you would get in that part and pull him back or just do something. I mean, he just stood with his hands on his hips and watched the guy score. And this is the problem with and his character, and you know, you listen to his interviews. It's not an exact science, but he sounds like he can't be bothered. He doesn't have that. He's going to need a coach to push him every single day of his career. And a player like that is tantalizing because there'll be a coach that'll be, you know, confident enough in their ability to think, I can get the best out of this guy. And if we do, he could be, you know, one of the top 5 or 10 pass rushers and defensive linemen in the NFL. But then there's a GM saying, hang on a minute, look at this draft class. You know, we can go get him instead. We can get Solomon Thomas, or we can get Taco Charlton, or we could get, you know, Tack McKinley. And the coach ends up having a seed because there's less risk, and the talent overall is so good. So I think Malik McDowell might last just because of the attitude problems. In terms of others, I mean, I think Cam Robinson's going to go later than people think. I think it's going to be interesting to see how OJ Howard ends up doing at the combine next week, because Njoku's really pushing him, and if there's not often room for two tight ends to go in the top 25, so if Njoku gets ahead of him, maybe OJ Howard lasts to the end of the first round. And the other one, it's an obvious answer, I guess, is Jabril Peppers, because some people view him as one of the very best in the class, top 20 lock, and others think he's going to drop out the first round. So he certainly, I think, when he declared, expected to be a top 10 pick. Everyone was talking about him as a top 5, top 10 pick during the college season, and now he might not be a first round pick, so he could be someone who falls a bit.
Yeah, obviously every year, last couple of years, we always sit there, especially last year, where we sat there till the very early hours of the morning, and the Seahawks trade back a few spots. Do you see that being a possibility this year? Obviously now they've kept hold of their second round pick. There could be some quarterbacks at that point in the first round, and if they do trade back, who would you see a trade partner to be at this point? The Jets, maybe, or someone like that? Or
I mean, it obviously depends what Cleveland does in the with their first two picks, and whether they go after someone like Jimmy Garoppolo, because if they don't have an option at quarterback, and if someone is sat on the board, you know, whether it's a Kizer or Mahomes or Deshaun Watson, even maybe if they're still there at 26, you could see maybe Cleveland saying, let's take a chance. You know, we've got the 33, we've spent two first round picks on different positions already. Let's just go in and take a chance on Deshaun Watson, knowing that, you know, because it's not a top 15 pick, the risk is less there if it doesn't work out. So they could be a team. You know, Chicago, we're going to have an answer at quarterback. I think many people expect they're going to go after someone like Tony Romo or Garoppolo or Glennon or somebody like that. But you know, there's going to be a lot of competition for those guys. So let's see what they do. The Jets were an interesting one because they have a lot of quarterbacks, but none of them seem to be the answer. So if they were to move up and get another one now, they're basically writing off the second round pick they spent on Christian Hackenberg a year ago. And I'm not sure the GM is willing to do that just yet. And then, you know, there are other teams who might be a bit of a surprise option. You know, New Orleans eventually are going to have to move on from Drew Brees. Are they somebody that would consider moving up? What do Buffalo do in the first round? What do they do with Tyrod Taylor? You know, are they going to be looking at quarterbacks? And although they're very unlikely to trade with Seattle, I guess Arizona are going to be looking at the quarterbacks in this draft. And if they don't take one at 13, they're probably going to be wanting to move up as well. Because Carson, I think the expectation is that this time next year, Carson Palmer's going to be retired. And Arizona without Carson, well, we've seen what Arizona with Drew Stanton at quarterback looks like. It's terrible. So, you know, I sincerely hope that they continue to neglect the position and don't train anybody up, because it might make it a bit easier for the Seahawks to make a run at number one, number two seed if the rest of the division is truly hopeless. So they're going to have to do something this offseason. And I noticed a comment about Bruce Arians saying he'd like to sign Jay Cutler. If that's their plan, then go ahead, Bruce.
Yes, yeah, so someone like Mahomes could really be in play in the second round if he's still there, can he? Because he's so much fun. His stat lines for Texas Tech last year were just incredible. But he is someone who probably needs a year to have things slowed down for him, doesn't he?
He's good. I mean, he's a good player.
Yeah.
I think it was the last game that they played in the season. I can't remember who they were playing. And I had it on in the background and just kept being drawn to the TV because he was throwing these incredible, you know, like on the move, hauling it downfield, yeah, you know, about 300 yards in the first quarter or something. And you watch him, you think, this guy can play. You know, he's just got an X factor about him that, you know, that's really good. But then you kind of study the tape a bit more and you see the way that he throws his footwork is horrendous. You would never want. And then you kind of wonder, if he's throwing off his back foot, if his kind of angled body is all weird, you know, kind of throws it sidearm, you know, are these things that at the next level are going to cause him problems? And if you try and fix them, is he going to be as effective as he is without this unorthodox style? So I can see a coach saying, we can work with this guy. He's unorthodox, but he's magical. But then actually turning that into a functioning quarterback, there aren't many unorthodox quarterback. I mean, even someone like Russell Wilson, he's just short. I mean, everything else about him is pretty textbook, you know, in terms of technique. So he would be quite the rare player to succeed in that kind of situation.
Yeah. Right. I think that's all we got. Everything covered. Guys, any other questions for Rob?
No, I've just got my head.
We're all good, thank you.
My head's just flooded full of names at the minute.
Actually, I've got one very quickly, Rob. Let's say someone is looking to start a draft board for themselves after this draft. What's the sort of process that you go through in order to get your initial names down and whatnot to build up? Because it is a year-long process.
Yeah, I think the first thing to do is look at the recruits that come out every year. You can get it, like, if you actually look at the recruits from 3 years ago, a lot of the big names in this draft are on there, you know, like the Leonard Fournettes and the Myles Garretts. And there's one or two players. It's interesting to follow the players that didn't end up succeeding, like Deshaun Hand, who was the number one recruit in the country at Alabama and is not among the big names going to go in this draft class. You know, I think he's staying at Alabama for another year. So you can follow the recruits through, you know, you can track the five-star guys, track the guys that come through, and then follow them. And like, it was obvious from year one that Myles Garrett, for example, was going to be a top three pick. And now he's going to be the number one overall pick. And you know, the Rory players we can say pretty safely are going to go early next year. One of those was Arden Key at LSU. There were some personal issues with him at the moment that might be a bit of an issue, but hopefully nothing too serious there. But he's a really special pass rusher. You've got the quarterback at USC, I think he's probably going to, if he can continue to do what he's done, Sam Darnold, then, you know, you can imagine him being a future number one overall pick or number sort of top five pick. The guy who could replace or is going to replace Leonard Fournette, the running back Geis at LSU, I think that he's a redshirt sophomore next year. So he could declare for the draft. And I mean, I love Leonard Fournette, but Geis could be even better. I mean, he's just sensational. So he's somebody who I would imagine if he has the kind of year next year that a lot of people think, he could go very early. So, you know, it's just sort of picking. And another name for you, Bradley Chubb at NC State. I thought he was going to declare for this draft and he didn't. And Nick Chubb has got a fantastic physical profile and their cousins. If Bradley Chubb is anywhere near the same kind of athlete that his cousin at Georgia, the running back is, then he's someone who could go really early next year. So, you know, it's just kind of following the guys, watch a lot of college football, and sort of track names that are only sophomores or guys that don't declare and just keep an eye on it. But if next year's draft is half as good as this one is shaping up to be, then we're in for a treat. This is the most interesting draft class I think we've had in probably since 2011.
Yeah, because I've done a draft board for the first time properly this year, and I think I'm at top 100, and I've got like 17, 18 cornerbacks and about 10 safeties as well. So it's loaded at certain positions. Another name for next year is a guy we talked about on the podcast a few months ago, Cortland Sutton at SMU, who possibly could be the first round pick this year. I think he could easily be the wide receiver number one next year as well. And then there's the guy at Oklahoma State. We went back, I can't remember his name. There's a wide receiver there as well. So there's certainly names already popping out for me anyway. But yeah, massive thanks to Rob for joining us. So are you going to be able to keep track and watch much of it next week? Or?
Oh yeah, I mean, I've already booked the time off work. and it's needed. I mean, I've done a live blogging during the combine for the last 3 or 4 years, and I've said to my wife after each year, I'm not doing that again next year, because it's harder work than it is actually being at work, because you end up watching the thing for hours and hours and hours and end, and then you just suddenly realize it's late at night, and it starts about 2 o'clock in the afternoon and goes on to about sort of 6-7 o'clock, and you just feel at the end drained, because it's the workout, it's the drills after the 40-yard dashes that you want to kind of watch. You want to see who's looking good, and you'll be watching a drill, and the next minute a list of broad jumps will come out, and you're like quickly scrambling to get all the information, and then somebody else will get measured, and you're like, we'll quickly go and get that, and then Lacanfora or Schefter puts out Seahawks are interested in this guy in free agency or something, and then you're trying to cover that. So the whole it's an NFL obsessive dream, but I think that by Monday night and especially with the fact that we've got a newborn in the house and a 3-year-old, I think I'll just be exhausted and ready for a break.
Yeah, but is the Monday with the cornerbacks is the night
that's the day.
Yeah.
That is the day. That's going to be a lot of fun, isn't it? 20 quarterbacks, I reckon, before the end of the third round will be drafted.
Yeah, this truly ridiculous class. I mean, there's like three guys, it seems, in every... When there's one player in the team, the other two guys, Nickel or opposite him, are also high. Well, obviously, Florida got Tabor and the other guy, I can't remember his name, you mentioned earlier.
Tabor Wilson?
Yeah. Yeah. So every team seems to have two or three guys who are up just insanely, insanely good. Really do appreciate you joining us. And as Ross said, filling our brains with all these names to keep a track of for the next few weeks. Obviously, free agency is a couple of weeks away. Is there any player, obviously me and Adam have got Clay Campbell, and you quite effectively quashed that dream over the last 12 hours. Is there any player that you would like the Seahawks to take a run at in free agency?
You know what? It's not a great free agency class, unfortunately. I hope that there is. Do you know what? If there's one player I'd quite be interested in, and people may have mixed views on this, it's probably Okung. And if he gets cut by Denver, he knows the running scheme, he knows the offensive line scheme. You could kind of plug Russell Okung back in there. It's an upgrade, and it's also, even if he gets injured, if George Fant played five games at left tackle instead of 16.
Yeah.
Not a big deal. if you know, let Fant and Gilliam compete at right tackle and have Okung there and know what you're getting from him. I don't know whether he'd be interested in coming back to Seattle or not. Maybe he wouldn't. But, you know, I think he, more than any of the other offensive tackle options. If there's one name that I'd be really interested in, he's not a free agent yet, but he might be, depending on what Philadelphia do, it's Connor Barwin. I think that the Seahawks could stand to have another edge rusher and a veteran one at that. He's 30 years old. People don't remember this, but he actually ran a 4.47 at his combine, which is just sensational. He's kind of that classic Leo wide nine type defensive end, and he does not fit in Philadelphia's defense. You know, that's the talk all year, is he does not fit in Jim Schwartz's scheme. I think he's due $8 million this year, and I think they're willing to sort of move on from that. Mm-hmm. So whether or not he could be available in a cheap trade, like we've seen with Julius Thomas and Brandon Albert recently, or whether or not he gets cut, I'd be very interested in having Connor Barwin there. And just kind of, they had a look at Jared Allen a few years ago and maybe considered bringing him in, and they've looked at other guys as well. Henry Melton, and, you know, there's veteran kind of defensive linemen they've looked at in the past. I'd really like Connor, especially with they've got the cap room. I'd really like them to see if they could get Connor Barwin on a 1 or 2 year deal and see if he could do what Chris Long did for New England this year.
What about Andrew Whitworth?
Problem with him is he's 36 in December, and because of the physicality of Seattle's scheme on offense, you know, you notice the offensive linemen get banged up a lot. I wonder whether or not they would believe that he could last it out, whether or not he might just get really hurt quite early on. And I'm not sure whether or not he looks at, you know, trying to take on the zone blocking scheme at this stage in his career as something that he would want to do. I mean, he's basically been a man scheme, and it's a lot easier. It's kind of just play straight up. And he's done that at Cincinnati. You know, there was a suggestion a few days ago that it's going to happen. He's going to stay in Cincinnati. And then he kind of threw a curveball and said, I want to test free agency. But I think that they have got the cap room. They seem to have a determination to keep him. It's not like the Bengals are not a contender. I mean, I know they had a bad year last year, but before that, they were, you know, one of the favorites for the Super Bowl. So going somewhere else maybe is not the best thing for him. So I think he'll probably stay with the Bengals. If he goes somewhere else, it might be a team that just plays more of a similar scheme. And Seattle's scheme is so intricate, so detailed, so you need to be ingrained in it, really. I do think that some of the players will take a step forward this year, having had that extra year's experience. I'm a bit more optimistic than some others about that. But I do think they need to bring at least one offensive lineman in somehow, whether it's via trade or free agency. And, you know, Whitworth is a name that a lot of people like, but I personally would rather have the guy who's played the scheme before and didn't have a terrible year in Denver last year. And if you get Okung back for $6-7 million next year on a prove it type contract, like come back and play with us for a year for $6-7 million, $8 million, don't break the bank, see where you are in a year's time. I think that'd be ideal for all parties.
Yeah. I think that's what you were saying a couple of days ago, wasn't it, Adam?
Yeah, well, there were so many left tackles getting getting cut and going to be in the market that it seems like if he did want to make a run at Okung, he hasn't really. It's certainly a buyer's market, I think, on left tackle at the moment.
Yeah,
I'd agree. And you know, the way that Albert's, you know, been shuffled off to Jacksonville, and you know, Beecham's been cut, Clady's been cut.
Clady.
What's going to happen with Clady? Yeah, what's going to happen with Jason Peters in Philadelphia? You know, he could be another option as well, although another aging guy who's been hurt. And I think there'll be one or two others. I noticed yesterday that there was talk that Jared Valdir might get cut in Arizona, because the problem Arizona's got is as soon as they franchise Chandler Jones, and that's going to happen, they've got virtually no cap room. And they still want to keep Jefferson the safety. They'd like to, I guess, at least talk to Calais Campbell. A lot of their key players are free agents on defense. Kevin Minter, the inside linebacker, is a free agent. They've got so many players who are coming to the end of their contracts. They've not managed the cap particularly well, Arizona, because of Larry Fitzgerald and Carson Palmer mainly. So they need to create some cap room. They are going to move DJ Humphries. They've confirmed this already, the first round pick in 2015. They're going to move him to left tackle next year. So Jared Valdir is on for a $10 million salary, and he's going to be playing at best right tackle. They could only save $4.5 million by cutting him, but that's if they don't really feel like the worth is there anyway. You know, we don't want to play him at right tackle anyway. Having that extra $4.5 million might actually help them keep Jefferson, for example, or one of the others. So, you know, Jared Valdir at age 28, 29 could be available in that, and that could be someone they look at.
And in that instance, the team that picks him up pays the difference of the salary, don't they?
It depends, because if he gets cut, they'll just pay. They'll just take a dead cap hit. So his contract is $10 million, and Arizona will absorb a hit of $6.5 million this year, but they will get a $4.5 million saving, and that would mean that the Seahawks would then, or anybody else, would just negotiate a new contract with Valdir. Okay. So if he was saying like, I want $6-7 million to play in 2017, and see where I'm in a year's time, or if it's like 2-3 year deal, which is probably the best that he could hope for, you might be looking at $6-8 million in this tackle market. So it'd be something that I imagine teams would be interested in, and maybe to get a veteran right tackle who's, you know, a lot of people liked a couple of years ago, that could be an option there.
Yeah, it's bad. Obviously, there's people still in Atlanta, probably still haven't moved through shock after what happened a few weeks ago, and we're already talking about the 2017 season. So NFL is definitely 365. But yeah, if people want to send questions and if want to get in touch with you, how can they do that on social media, Rob?
Well, you know, the blog has got a really, one of the good things about the blog is that there's a really active community there. And, you know, one of the things we've done since 2008 is create a community where people can come on, discuss the draft, suggest things. There's no swearing, there's no insulting, it's surprising because it's on the internet and none of this happens, but we've managed to achieve that. So if you want to come on and talk Seahawks and talk draft, then the comment section is loaded every day. You know, it's a really, really vibrant comment section with, you know, 100-200 messages every day. Wow. So healthy discussion there if you want to get involved. The other thing is, you know, I'm always happy to talk about the Seahawks on Twitter. If you can put up with random tweets about South Yorkshire sport and football in particular as well, the day job, then
I'm a Leeds fan.
Followers at it's the Leeds Sheffield Wednesday this week as well. So if you want to follow us, then it's at Rob Staten. But the blog is the best place to talk about the draft and the Seahawks, and that is SeahawksDraftBlog.com.
Cool. Talk for Adam and Ross. Massively appreciate you coming on and taking time out of your day. Enjoy next week. Enjoy the rest of the draft. And yeah, might look to get you back on closer to the draft and obviously have a better idea of free agency come and gone and everything. But until then, thanks, Rob.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Cheers,
thanks,
Rob.
A lot.
All eyes will be squarely focused on podium number 6. And Marshawn Lynch. And this is a guy who's been fined several times over the years, whether it's for not talking to the media. But today we'll see if he's a man of many words or just very few words.
Oh, it started? Well, then let me start. Hey, I'm just here so I don't get fined. So y'all can sit here and ask me all the questions y'all want to. I'm going to answer with the same answer. So y'all can shoot if y'all please. I'm here so I won't get fined. I'm just here so I won't get fined. I'm here so I won't get fined. I'm here so I won't get fined. I'm just here so I won't get fined.
Right, massive thanks as always to Rob for joining us. That was a pretty good way to spend an hour. I think you agree, guys?
Oh, definitely.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so if obviously, as you said, the combine starts next week. It's always on NFL.com. I think the website is obviously, if you've still got Game Pass access as well. And obviously the other means you can watch things on the internet, if Sky Broadband hasn't blocked those options. Before we wrap up, obviously free agency is a couple of weeks away, so we'll probably look to do another one either before or in just as all that kicks off. I think it kicks off on the 9th of March at 9 o'clock our time. So just quickly do a future or falses. I'll start. 2017, the San Francisco 49ers. Now with Kyle Shanahan and the Seahawks defensive scheme in place, will finish above the Arizona Cardinals in the NFC West.
Oof. False. Very unsure false.
San Francisco are rubbish and haven't got any good players.
That's my thinking, yeah.
False.
Yes, but as we just heard, the Arizona Cardinals have got their back truly up against the wall. Kyle Shanahan is going to earn his corn as an offensive mind with the offense. But then the defense has the Oregon players, and it's going to have some early picks most likely, because if they don't go for Cousins, you'd expect that they might actually try and trade back and get more picks. So I really do think that Kyle Shanahan appointment is give that team a massive bump up. Obviously, not probably to get in the playoffs or playoff discussion, but I really do think that the NFC West, it might be a bit of a train wreck next year.
So have you got them finishing second then? Because I'm assuming the Rams are bottom of the West next year.
I would not be surprised, but that doesn't mean they're going to be 8-8 or 8. I really think the NFC West.
Oh right, it could be that carnage. Much of a disaster.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's an absolute carnage next year. I think Carson Palmer is possibly made a bit of a snafu by coming back, because his arm just looked like it had given up on him halfway through the season. Backs. So
yeah, looked really crap against us at CenturyLink. Jesus Christ, throwing the ball 950 yards to
yes, but that was Nelson. Not. Yes, okay, but that is
even
okay.
A box score finds a nut once.
Maybe it was the Shore air and stuff. Good for him.
Yeah, it's just I think that team is going to look completely different to what they did this year. Adam, Russ, true or false?
Yeah, I got one. True or false? Tony Romo ends up playing in the AFC next season because Jarrah couldn't stand being beaten by Romo in the playoffs.
It's probably true, because I think there's more quarterback openings in the AFC.
Yeah, Denver are definitely looking at him. I've heard the Chiefs as well. Chiefs are on his list of one of the teams he wants to go to.
That'd be pointless. You might as well just draft, if you're the Chiefs, you draft the quarterback.
Imagine if you trade away Alex Smith, get in Romo, and Romo gets injured. Brilliant.
Yeah, that's for me, if I was Tony Romo, I would literally just jump on the back of a horse and ride off into the sunset.
Agreed.
His body can't take any more. I mean, he was barely touched last year, and he played, one drive for the Cowboys in the season. So but that wasn't the question, so I think AFC.
Fair enough.
Adam?
Okay, what is my true or false going to be? I am going to go with... I haven't really got anything that's particularly interesting, as per any time I open my mouth, really.
You open yourself up to so much.
Yeah, exactly. Stay par for the course. Let's go with one of Martavis Bryant and Josh Gordon will be an all-pro wide receiver next year.
True. I'm not going to tell you which one, because I don't really know what the situation is with Gordon, but...
I mean, that's a scary Pittsburgh team if Bryant comes back.
Yeah, very.
If Bryant has grown up or whatever, something's clicked, but his CV and history suggests that he possibly doesn't learn from mistakes. And so, but if, yeah, that is... It is. I mean, even if Josh Gordon comes back and they sort their quarterback out, Cleveland... The running backs have got, obviously, Gary Barnage is a decent level tight end as well.
Is he still a Cleveland player, though, or is he a free agent?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I think so. I'm pretty sure. Certainly signed a 4-year deal a couple of years ago when he went mental and then did his E-Network reality show. but yeah, no, I think if Bryant stays on the narrow, he's legit, and that is just a stupid offense. And surprise, surprise, Roethlisberger will be back in 2017.
with
the toys firmly back in his pram.
he's such a receiver. What is bad as Russ?
Russell Wilson with his Michael Phelps-esque Instagram post this morning of him in swimming pools. So. Not to bite through on that one. Obviously a couple of weeks away from free agency, as I said. We'll probably just try and get another podcast out to yourselves. There should be something coming down the pipe regards a 2017 national meet. Location has been provisionally booked, but obviously just waiting for the people to see if they have any alternatives. So keep an eye on that on the Facebook and the website and your emails if you're a member. Obviously, also talking of membership and committee and stuff, we now have the London rep, and was it the South, one of the South Coast reps on the podcast, along with one of the Midlands reps. So,
look at us.
Yeah, we're truly spreading our seed around the UK Sea Hawkers.
That's one way of putting this image.
But yeah, obviously now with Rob quite impressively demolishing our Clay Campbell dream, Adam, is that been kiboshed for you now, or do you still hold out?
I'm a romantic stew with this stuff. All logic is out the window. Calais, 9th of March, whenever the day is, he's coming.
Massively appreciate all the questions. Obviously, Dave and Mark and Lenny, we got to yours with Rob. Do we have any others on the Facebook group, Russ?
We do indeed. Let me just read them out for you then. John Davison, says, reading the paper on Saturday, I saw a big article about Jermaine is a tackle for Texas A&M who was born in London. He is likely to be drafted. So two questions. How good is he, and how good would it be to have a British-born Hawk player?
Well, we did cover that one, as it goes. Rob talked about him. He says he's going to be drafted. Possibly inside, I think he says. So, I haven't really watched much of him because I haven't got that deep into offensive guards this year yet. But yeah, if Rob seems to think he might be a fit, it just depends how he. I think he's at the combine next week as well, I believe. Any others?
Yeah, one from Chris Balding. Easy one for you to debate. Who would be our biggest free agent to lose? So I'm asking who's our most important player that could walk out the door, possibly?
Adam?
I guess Luke Wilson, only because it's a fairly mediocre class anyway.
Yeah, we've got 14 unrestricted free agents, but you've got Bradley Staal, Tony McDaniel, not much else who are free agents. Luke Wilson, Stephen Hauschka, obviously, but that position's clearly been sorted out. It's either going to be Blair Walsh or a rookie. I think probably Luke Wilson, just because of how much of a role he's played over the last 3-4 years. Not that it's been like the key cog, like a Doug Baldwin or a Russell Wilson or a Marshawn Lynch or a Sherman Thomas Bennett, but the fact that he's had, 1,000 yards over his career, he's had all the 6 or 7 touchdowns, obviously had the touchdown, the 2-point conversion thing, the shortest ever Hail Mary throw. I think just a result of all how minor, with all due respect, the other free agents are, then yeah, probably
there's definitely someone I'd like to re-sign though. Marcel Reese want to re-sign. I want Kelsey McCrae to come back, and DeMontre Moore as well, if he can sort out his off-field issues.
I think Marcel Reese will probably come back. Yeah. Kelsey McCrae, DeMontre Moore. Kelsey McCrae especially, you're going to get someone like him in the draft. I think Jaron Johnson's unrestricted. He's the same. You're going to see his draft 2 or 3 DBs, and then you've got Pierre Desir, Stanley Jean-Baptiste, and another young corner. Obviously, DeAndre Elliott, Nico Thorpe. I don't think he'll be, if he'll be back, it'll be...
It's a good special team, but he's not getting paid for...
Then you got DeAndre Elliott, who they seem quite excited about, who beat out my boy Ty Smith, who's, I think, been signed by the Jets or the Redskins, I think, Ty Smith has. I think Carson McRae's probably gone, just because, as I said, the draft class for that position is just ludicrous.
Mike Morgan is a free agent.
Mike Morgan, I think, is the same. Yeah, I think he'll be someone who you sign after all the... No one really is going to give him a Malcolm Smith deal, because he doesn't have a Super Bowl MVP. He doesn't really have any flashy plays. He's just a steady special teamer. He could be someone like Chris Maragos was a few years ago, who left for Philly just to be a special teams leader and captain.
Yeah.
Take a look at that special teams unit and you see how effective Maragos is. Any others?
One from John Maxfield. He's got 3 questions. I'm going to pick out this one. I'll be interested in hearing people's thoughts on cable-style project linemen that we might pick up in the mid to late rounds. So you've had a look at a few of these guys, Stu. Any ones that kind of... Any defensive tackles that we could convert?
No, I don't think...
Are we done
with
that?
I think that's done. It's going to be the 5 we've got now, and then, as I think Adam said a few weeks ago, you pick... veteran up than you draft one or two. The El Mignol is probably going to be a project because he's, as Rob said, he doesn't have much background in the game. Andreas Knapp, who we pressed on a few weeks ago, he could be a guy who's a bit of a project, but I don't see any Christian Sicoli's, J.R. Sweezes, and it's, I think that'll be something to keep an eye on next week when, if you see any D-linemen doing O-line drills or vice versa and stuff. So, I think that time, it's time to just nail down five now. It's not time to
be pissing around.
But Adam, what do you think?
I think that they probably know they've taken quite a bit of heat in the past, well, in the last year especially, for trying to get a little bit too clever. And I would suggest that unless they feel that there's someone absolutely exceptional, then they'll try and play it with a fairly straight bat in this draft when it comes to linemen and not be too clever.
Do you want to go through John's other questions, Russ?
I think Rob kind of covered most of them, like the minimum requirements for Seahawks players in terms of arms, length, height, that sort of stuff. And if there are any players carrying minor injuries that we know about who put up less than impressive combine performances and end up dropping, really.
Well, I think the big one is John Ross, who is working out and then having surgery after the combine, which is, as I said to Adam on a WhatsApp a few days ago, that's
it's a risk.
Really, really smart decision, because you want to put the times, you want to put the height, weight, all that stuff on a spreadsheet somewhere and have teams to use that. It's the complete opposite, as Rob said, to Ryan Ramczyk at Wisconsin, but not, that'll be something you see when they roll up to town and the doctors, when they have the medicals and stuff, they sign players off, so it won't be something we know until Tuesday, Wednesday next week. If people want to get involved, obviously you've got Patreon and all that stuff, and want to rate, comment, feedback on the podcast, where can they go and do that? Ross?
Yeah, to follow our Patreon, and thank you to the 10 guys that already do. You've covered the cost of the podcast every month, which is fantastic. And I've been posting lots of Patreon-only stuff as well, so you have to be a patron to get that. There's $1, $3, $5, and $12 levels that you can back us at, and each one provides you with different things. If you are a backer of any level, and then check your mailbox the next couple of days, you're going to get a special pedestrian podcast sticker that's coming through your letterbox with a little note from us. You can do that by going to patreon.com/thepedestrianpodcast. You can find the podcast, if you get us from Podbean, and a lot of you do, it's pedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. We've incredibly gone over 95,000 downloads since we last released a podcast. We've had 10,000 downloads, guys. I'm not sure what's going on, but
it's all the porn bots.
It's probably the Russians.
We're now more popular in the United States than we are in the UK. So up your game, UK listeners, spread the word. We're a UK podcast. Come on. But thank you to our American listeners. We love you. There's loads of you. You're all over the place. Pedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. And on iTunes, if you get us from there, leave us a 5-star rating and review. That'd be wonderful.
Yeah, and on Twitter, it's @Stu_Core, @RossBow1984.
Yep.
And Adam D. Nathan. Also, our back writing for Pro Football Spot. So that's profootballspot.com. All the Seahawks stuff will be going on there. Drafting Seahawks. All the rest of it. All the free agency stuff in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, until the next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast. If you do manage to watch any of Scouting Combine next week, enjoy the one time a year where height is listed in four figures. But yeah, it's been the Pedestrian Podcast. And
go Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champions.